Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, December 8th, 2025. Beginning with some articles from the front page, Uptown Normal, a merry meetup. Families visit Mr. Claus on opening day of Santa's Station. There are a number of photos of this, including a very adorable six-week-old Marin Les Miller sitting on Santa's lap for her first visit with the jolly old elf, and a family of three, six-year-old twins, and a five-year-old sitting on Santa's lap once again at Santa's Station in Uptown Normal. The opening day was Saturday, December 6th. 2025. Town of Normal. Council to vote on 25 tax levy. $15.7 million proposal sends $11.3 million to municipal government, $4.4 million to Normal Public Library. By Natus Janik. Normal. The Normal Town Council is expected to vote on its $15.7 million property tax levy during a special meeting tonight. The meeting will take place at 5:30 p.m. in the council chambers on the fourth floor of Uptown Station. The proposed 2025 property tax levy for taxes payable in 2026 includes about $11.34 million for the town government and $4.37 million for the Normal Public Library. The proposed 2025 property tax levy for taxes payable in 2026 includes about $11.34 million for the town government. The total represents a 4.78 increase over the $14.99 million 2024 levy for taxables payable in 2025. The increases break down to about 3% for the town share and 9% for the library, but 8.5% growth in Normal's tax base is expected to reduce the overall tax rate. The preparation of the $15.7 million property tax levy was approved by the Council on November 17th, after Council Member Kevin McCarthy amended to assign $500,000 from the General Fund to help pay the town's Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund obligation. Of the town's share of the levy, all but $500,000 of the levy was earmarked for employee retirement. Police and fire pensions, IMRF, Social Security, and Medicare. No council member objected to funding those obligations, but the other $500,000 drew objections from council members Kathleen Lorenz and Preston, with Preston being the only one to vote against the levy itself. For the library's levy increase, town officials said they aim to replenish the library's reserves after they were used to fund renovations completed this year without taking on debt, and to finish other capital projects like heating, ventilation, and air conditioning upgrades over the next 5 years. Even with the combined levy going up, the growth in the town's equalized assessed valuation, the total taxable value of property in the town, results in the tax rate decreasing from 1.087 per $100 equalized assessed valuation in 2024 to $1.047 per $100 EVA in 2025. For a house valued at $210,000, the town and library share of the property tax bill would drop from $761 to $733, but rising home values would increase the tax bills, town officials said. For example, taxes on a $280,000 home could increase by $48, the town officials said. The council will also vote on abating $5 million in property taxes for bonds issued between 2009 and 2021. For those who cannot attend, Council meetings are also live streamed on the town's YouTube channel. Turning to page 2, today's Flick Fact. Today's question. Today you can sit in chairs in Fat Jack's, a popular bar on North Main Street in downtown Bloomington. But before that, in the store originally there, you could instead buy chairs. Can you remember the store's name? Today's answer. Until 1996, the Fat Jack's locale was instead F. Loeb's Furniture. That's when, after nearly 100 years as a furniture store, Fred Loeb turned down the business. How time flies. 100 years ago, 1925. With 28 miles of new pavement and less than 2 miles to be built on the Bloomington-Gibson City Highway, the weatherman delivered a final knockout blow yesterday, and work was suspended for the winter season. Sunshine and balmy temperatures needed for road work will not be available again until next spring. 75 years ago, 1950. Sledding is in full swing on the St. Mary's School Hill on West Taylor Street, which has been closed to traffic. The steep hill has been a popular toboggan slide in Bloomington for many years. 50 years ago, 1975. The 1,265 cans of food collected by Kiwanis Club members along the Christmas parade route on December 7th were surveyed December 8th by Mrs. Robert Geddes, wife of the Salvation Army's captain. The Salvation Army will distribute the food, plus toys, collected along the route at Christmas. 25 years ago, 2000. All that glitters may not be gold, but don't tell that to the Salvation Army. The bright spot came December 7th in the form of a single gold South African Krugerrand that someone dropped anonymously in a red kettle staffed by Illinois Wesleyan University students at the Target store at College Hills Mall in Normal. The 1 ounce coin is valued at $274 at current gold prices, according to Midwest Exchange Inc. coin dealer. With the exception of last year, the Bloomington-based agency has received gold coins in the kettle each year since the late 1980s. No one knows why the tradition was missed in 1999. Turning to page A3, local and state news, public safety. 120 traffic tickets issued by D. Jack Alcury, Bloomington. Police departments in the Twin Cities announced they handed out over 120 traffic citations during the Thanksgiving period from November 21st through December 2nd. The Bloomington Police Department issued 24 tickets for speeding violations, along with one distracted driving violation and 29 citations for other infractions, according to a news release. Bloomington Police Department also said they arrested one individual for a traffic-related offense. The Normal Police Department handed out 41 speeding tickets, 2 distracted driving tickets, 14 seatbelt citations, and 14 for other infractions. There were no traffic-related arrests in Normal during that time period. Police ramped up enforcement with funds from the Illinois Department of Transportation as part of the state's campaigns to Click It or Ticket, Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over, and It's Not a Game. Also from page A3, agents used tear gas on Elgin protesters. Standoff coincided with Christy Nome's visit to Chicago's Navy Pier by Rebecca Johnson, Chicago Tribune. Chicago, federal immigration agents deployed tear gas and pepper spray Saturday on a crowd that gathered to protest a prolonged arrest in a northwest Chicago suburb, angering neighbors who said it was uncalled for and tremendously disappointing. The standoff began around 10 a.m. Saturday, when about 15 agents showed up to arrest an unidentified man at an apartment building in the 1600 block of Maple Lane in Elgin. Elgin police said there had been a traffic crash that morning involving a federal agent and the man, who then fled to the building. The crowd, blowing whistles and shouting at agents to leave, grew throughout the morning, eventually swelling to at least 200 people by the afternoon. By 2:30 p.m., the man the agents were attempting to arrest was still on the second-floor balcony. About 30 agents tried to negotiate with him, while protesters told the man not to talk to them. About an hour later, agents reportedly arrested the man while he was inside an apartment. Afterward, while driving away, agents hurled pepper spray and flashbang grenades into the crowd. One agent told community members, "Back up or gas will be deployed," seconds before he threw a canister. A video shows. U.S. Department of Homeland Security and Immigration and Customs Enforcement spokespeople didn't immediately respond for comment. Meanwhile, Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem joined the U.S. Coast Guard for a Christmas tree event at Navy Pier on Saturday. Audrey Lubin, 40, of West Chicago, said the pepper spray and tear gas went everywhere into the crowd, and that she could still smell it about an hour later on her clothes. Lubin said neighbors asked the agents to see a warrant, which they refused. "It's almost as though they wanted things to escalate," she said. "I don't understand what goes through their mind to justify that kind of action. This could have just been a normal Saturday, and instead, this is what they have to do to our community." Federal agents face mounting scrutiny from fearful residents and the courts alike over their use of chemical crowd control weapons during Operation Midway Blitz, which has tapered off since Border Patrol Chief Gregory Bovino left Chicago with hundreds of his agents in November. Body cameras repeatedly captured agents' apparent glee in deploying tear gas and other munitions on residential streets. It's clear that Chicago and Illinois remain a target of the administration. Brandon Lee of the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights told the Tribune recently after their agents detained at least three people in the west suburbs. Tracy Howell, 58, said the agents tackled the man after he stepped closer to them on the sidewalk. At that point, agents shot pepper balls, which Howell said irritated her nose and throat. She had appeared at the apartment building around noon. "The agents just kept saying, 'Move back, move back.' And I kept asking, 'Where do you want us to move back to?'" she said. "And the guy who was most aggressive pushed me to the ground." Howell said neighbors were bringing pizzas, waters, and hand warmers so the group could stay protesting longer. She said, "It causes me so much anxiety to see the federal immigration activity in her community, especially the use of chemical crowd control weapons. That was just testosterone and anger and uncalled for. There was no reason for it. One little step and they're triggered," she said. "I would have never guessed that I would have been pepper shot or pushed down by law enforcement." Elgin police said they received reports that shots had been fired, but they determined that wasn't true after arriving at the scene. They instead found that agents had dispersed chemical irritants. They treated and released several people at the scene. The Elgin Police Department will continue to respond to any calls for service and determine the appropriate action within the parameters of the Illinois Trust Act, which prohibits Elgin officers from assisting with federal immigration enforcement operations, the department said. From page 4, column from Tim Hornseth, Aha Moments While Cooking in the Kitchen. There will be readers who will shake their head once they finish reading this column, while I think others will say to themselves, "I did not know about this." We learn new things every day. Sometimes, many times, the new stuff we learn and absorb, we barely recognize as new to us as we go about our lives. Other times, there is the aha moment of realization. Or in my case, it is more likely to be, you have got to be kidding me, moment. Sometimes our learning is similar to the five stages of grief. Denial, suspicious or cautious absorbing of information, desperate searching for alternative facts or contrary scenarios, reluctant acceptance of factual information, realization of past errors or assumption of why things were not right before, the aha moment. I think an example might illustrate quite nicely a recent learning experience of mine. I could cook, bake, prepare food at an acceptable but minimal level. Not because I can't follow instructions or don't know how to turn on a stove, but rather I am not all that interested in the cooking and baking process. I love to eat, but the whole preparation process is just a chore to do. It's not fun, not very interesting to me. I guess this lack of interest directly led to a blind spot in my kitchen food prep knowledge base. Over time, when I have cooked or baked things, sometimes they turn out great, delicious, and looking and tasting like it's supposed to be. Other times, things turn out slightly not right. The food usually tastes okay, or is at least edible, but is nothing to be proud of. Sometimes the texture is not quite right, or it doesn't look like it should. It was only recently, as I was following the directions diligently, as I usually do, when my wife asked me what I was doing with the measuring cups. I replied along the lines of measuring the water I needed to add to the package of noodles. She then asked why was I using the dry measuring cup instead of the other cup. I replied, I like to use dry, clean cups when I am cooking. It was at this point that she informed me there are two kinds of measuring cups, one kind for measuring dry ingredients and one type of cup for measuring liquids. Cue step one. After successfully more or less cooking food for myself and others for 50 years and never hearing this before, cue step one again. Then cue steps two and three. Nothing I have ever read in cookbooks or recipes indicates that there are two different kinds of measuring cups. Nothing on any of the measuring cups is marked wet, liquid, dry, potluck, anything goes. How was I supposed to know? Cue step four, when spouse's logic appears to be making sense. Something about liquids at the edge of the container and the measured mark on the cup. Darn her. Step five occurs when I realize how many times my finished cooking attempts turn out not quite how they should have turned out. Too much liquid or too little dry ingredients. All because I randomly picked different measuring cups to use. Aha! Tim Hornseth spent his formative years here in Normal, attending elementary through high school in Unit 5 schools. His wife is a native of Normal and an Illinois State University graduate. They reside in the third largest city in Minnesota, coincidentally living less than a mile away from a fellow Normal Community High School graduate from the same year. Want more Tim? Go to conversationswithtimothy.wordpress.com to see past columns and see what he thinks about the world. Turning to Section B, the sports news, from page one of that section, Rested Illini Throttle Tennessee, by Teresa M. Walker. Nashville, Tomislav Ivicic and Keaton Wagner each scored 16 points, and number 14 Illinois beat number 13 Tennessee 75-62 Saturday night in the second part of the Music City Madness. The Fighting Illini, 7-2, came in rested after an 8-day break, with this the last of four top 15 opponents over a 7-game stretch. Illinois snapped a 5-game skid on neutral courts against ranked opponents, and also gave Coach Brad Underwood his first win in 3 tries against Tennessee. Illinois is averaging 90.4 points a game this season, after leading the Big Ten in scoring last season. Leading scorer Kylan Boswell went to the bench in the opening minutes, grabbing at his left shoulder. He returned and finished with 10 points. David Mirkovich added 10 for the Fighting Illini. Illinois controlled much of the first half. Ivicic scored the last 10 of the half for the Fighting Illini, but the Vols finished the half on an 11-4 run to put Tennessee up 34-32 at halftime. Illinois' next game will be at Ohio State on Tuesday night. Packers beat Bears to take over NFC North lead. By Steve McGarry. Green Bay, Wisconsin. Keyshawn Nixon intercepted Caleb Williams' pass in the end zone with 22 seconds remaining to preserve Green Bay's 28-21 victory over the Chicago Bears on Sunday that moved the Packers into first place in the NFC North. The Bears were facing 4th-and-1 from Green Bay's 14-yard line when Williams faked a handoff and rolled to his left. Tight end Cole Kmet had gotten behind Nixon in the end zone, but Nixon made a leaping catch of Williams' underthrown pass. Josh Jacobs scored the tie-breaking touchdown on a 2-yard run with 3:32 remaining as the Packers, 9-3-1, won their fourth straight game and snapped a 5-game winning streak by the Bears, who are 9-4. Green Bay's Jordan Love went 17 of 25 for 234 yards with 3 touchdowns, 2 to Christian Watson and 1 to Bo Melton, and 1 interception. Williams was 19 for 35 for 186 yards with 2 touchdowns and the fatal pick at the end of the game. Injuries reported in that game for the Bears include quarterback Nashawn Wright, who left in the fourth quarter, and wide receiver Rome Odunze, a foot injury he did not play during the game. Up next for the Bears, they will host the Cleveland Browns next Sunday. In other local news, Miller Park Zoo names interim director by Olivia Jacobs, Bloomington. The City of Bloomington's Parks and Recreation Department announced that Nora Fletchall has been named interim director of Miller Park Zoo. Fletchall took on the role this week, replacing former director Jay Pratt, who held the position since September 2022. "We have an interim director in place to ensure smooth, uninterrupted leadership while we complete the search for a permanent director," said Dave Lamb, assistant director for Parks and Recreation, in a news release from the city. City officials have not said when or under what circumstances Pratt left the role of director. Fletchall previously served as the assistant zoo director at the John Ball Zoo in Grand Rapids, Michigan, vice president of conservation, research, and education at the Indianapolis Zoo, president and CEO of the Buffalo Zoo in New York, and project manager with the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, or AZA. She brings 40 years of experience working in zoos across various areas, with an emphasis in animal management, exhibit design, and operations. She has also served on several AZA committees, including the Accreditation Commission, according to the release. "I look forward to working with the staff to provide the support during this transition and assure the Miller Park Zoo continues to be a place for guests of all ages to connect to wildlife and wild places," Fletchall said in the news release. Miller Park Zoo is an AZA-accredited zoo located at 1020 South Morris Avenue in Bloomington. It is open 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. daily, except for Thanksgiving and Christmas. "This transition allows us to maintain stability, support our staff, and continue providing the high-quality services our community expects," said Eric Veal, director for Parks and Recreation, in a prepared statement. "We look forward to selecting a long-term leader who will help guide the zoo into its next chapter." Daiso store set to open early 2026 in Normal, by Olivia Jacobs. Normal. Daiso, a Japanese retail company, is opening its Normal location in early 2026 and will host a hiring event this month. The store is described as similar to a dollar store, opening home goods, stationery, cosmetics, snacks, DIY supplies, and more at affordable prices. A building permit was issued by Retail Contracting Group on September 4th for a $468,577 Daiso build-out at 1700 East College Avenue, Suite 4, which is located in the College Plaza Shopping Center at the former site of Bed Bath & Beyond. Mike Beavers, commercial building inspector for the town of Normal, told the Pantograph the business was issued its certificate of occupancy on November 21st and is approved for occupancy. However, Beavers said the store's stocking timeline was not known, and an exact opening date has not been announced. Daiso lists the new store in Normal among its future store openings on its website, with a projected opening in early 2026. According to the Daiso U.S. website, the company will host a hiring event on-site from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. December 17th through 19th, seeking part-time sales associates and accepting applicants for all shifts. The Normal location is currently listed by Daiso's as its only store in downstate Illinois. Its Chicago area locations include Crystal Lake, Oswego, South Elgin, Bloomingdale, and Niles, according to the website. A representative for Daiso could not be reached for comment. Please visit daisous.com for more information. And from page 3, Pantograph Goodfellow Fund. The Goodfellow Fund, a charity owned and operated by Pantograph Media, is in its 98th year of giving back. Here is today's list of donors. Dave and Kay, $100. Give thanks to all the musicians in BN, contributing to the tuneful spirit of Christmas and the holidays. Lisa Bach, $100. In loving memory of my husband, John Bach. Patsy Oman, $100. Sharon Lawless, $100. In memory of my husband, Parker. Daniel and Margaret Gibb, $100. In memory of our parents and son, Chris. Ruthie, $100. In memory of Moxie, Bestie, and Addie. Bob and Nancy Daniels, $150. In memory of Floyd and Stephen Suter and Lloyd Jackson. Kathy Schneidwind, $50, in memory of my parents. Kathy McMahon, $50, in memory of Larry McMahon. Carol Pillow, $75, in memory of Barbara, Bill, and Lee Pillow, Wendell, Ruth, and Mike Coleman. Today's contributions totaled $925. To date, $34,000. $34,395 has been collected. Cash or check donations for the Goodfellow Fund can be mailed to the Pantograph Goodfellow Fund, P.O. Box 680, Bloomington, Illinois, 61702-680. Donations may be tax deductible. And the weather for today: clouds and sun, quite cold, wind south-southeast at 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 25 degrees. Overnight tonight, partly cloudy and breezy, winds south-southwest at 10 to 20 miles an hour, with a low of 21. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the reading of the Pantograph for Monday, December 8th, 2025. Please stay tuned.